I've got 7 o'clock. Are all the commissioners or the committee members here? Commission members here?
Correct.
Okay. Can we call this to order then? Any objections to starting?
All right. It is now 6 p.m. Central Time. I will call the roll. Chair Daly.
Yes, here.
Commissioner Ignolfo. Commissioner DeGroff.
Here.
And then we'll just need one of the members here in person to make a motion to enable Chair Daly to participate remotely due to work travel.
Second.
All right. All in favor, say aye.
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 Motion passes.
Okay. Excuse me. Next item on the agenda is citizen comments. Is there anyone there to make comments?
Yes, we have at least two.
Okay, great.
Phyllis or Margie, you guys are.
Margie Seconder, River Oaks Drive, 500 block. I received a word this afternoon, quite a few hours ago, that of this meeting. If there's a way to notify residents these meetings might be held, that'd be great. I asked Mr. Masella to do that if he can. I think the commission needs to look at more than Section 123-8 or whatever is on your agenda for amendments. I would like it to also include issues around duty to report, confidentiality. The Ethics Commission's intent was to be able to receive anonymous complaints. I don't recall seeing that in the current ordinance. In the packet, page 65, which is an analysis of peer comparisons on ethics ordinance, doesn't identify the source or name who is presenting that. I guess I want to know, how did this happen? How did we come to the point where there's an ordinance in place from April 25th of 2022 that when a complaint is filed, we don't have the process in place, and we have limited the Ethics Commission from its prior ordinance to limit it to only two sections: prohibitive political activities and gift ban. So somewhere along the way in the revisions, in the 8 months between August of 2021 and March of 2022, the broad authority was narrowed. And if you look at the January 20th, 2022 meeting minutes, Greg Smith, in his comments of January 12th in the margin, tells the EC, the Ethics Commission, that the restriction narrowing to only those two sections was in the prior ordinance. It was not. The Ethics Commission was not restricted in its authorities, and conflicts of interest was not eliminated from that. Why did the village president break confidentiality by naming me as the complainant on January 27th, the day after I submitted a complaint on the January 26th? I think you need to look at the process from a complainant's perspective. There is no contact information for confidentiality for a person to notify the commission. The village website says file all complaints with the EC, the Ethics Commission. The EC is listed under L for residents for local Ethics Commission. Residents don't even know the Ethics Commission exists for the most part. And now I believe that we are, as a village, are in crisis, an ethics crisis, with Kleinthorpe Jenkins ruling only on the legality of the complaints, not on the ethics of the complaints. And Kleinthorpe Jenkins telling the EC back January 20th of 2022 that the section 1-23-8B1 is the same as the prior. It was not. There also happens to be a smear campaign going on by some on the village board towards me, either directly or indirectly. And I ask you to consider all of these issues among the whole breadth from a different perspective than the EC commissioner, but from the perspective of a resident and how complaints might come forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else?
Yes, there's one more.
Hi, Phyllis Rubin, and I'll spell it because it's wrong in your minutes. P-H-Y-L-L-I-S, Rubin, R-U-B-I-N, 411 Ashland Avenue 6B. I don't have anything organized here because I got this very quickly too and have been trying to Google things as I got ready to think of what I was going to say and couldn't find what I was looking for. So I support you in getting back the authority to look at conflicts of interest. I'm not sure why it would not go to you. President Ducey said at the board meeting 2 weeks ago that there are a lot of village boards who hold on to that authority. On my way over here, I'm thinking, well, maybe those villages don't have an ethics committee. That's what I tried to Google. What villages hold on to their own conflict of interest? And I could not find it in the brief amount of time I had. I don't know why it wouldn't go to you. You're the people who it should go to. So I hope that you work to get it back. And of course, you can recommend something to the village board and they can always overrule you. That's their prerogative. But you are the people who look at ethics, and conflict of interest is one. And maybe that's all. I can't remember if there's anything else I wanted to say, but I really think that that we need to be careful. I was looking at your the minutes of the old conflict, the corrections. I think that Margie mentioned the edits in the margin, I'm going to lose my train of thought now. I think it said something. There was somewhere I read that really, no matter what is written, a governmental body should have the highest, strictest standards of ethical practices. So that would be your job, to make sure our government is following the highest standards of ethical practice. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'd personally like to extend a thank you to the citizens who have come in and spoken. I think it's very important that we have the involvement of the residents of River Forest. And I appreciate very much, your devotion to these issues and, giving of your time tonight to speak to us. The next thing on the agenda is approval of the meeting minutes of January.
I'm sorry, 30th. Chair Daly. One other resident wants to address the commission.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought there were only two. My apologies. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Corey Gimble. I live at 7575 Lake. My family has a tradition of speaking on things like this. My mother was the village clerk in Lincolnwood for a couple of years after she got into a situation with the clerk that had been in place for over 20 years. I have a real problem with what took place at the meeting where the trustees voted down going further and investigating what took place and how it fell through the cracks when people knew that the gentleman worked for Jones, JLL, and was sitting in on the meetings. I can't even begin to imagine how no one spoke up and did anything about it before that, nor can I understand how you, as the Ethics Committee, have nothing to say about conflict of interest. Who cares about anything else? Conflict of interest is the most important thing of all. That's what I have to say.
Thank you very much, sir. No one else there to speak?
Correct.
The next item is the approval of the meeting minutes of January 31st. We need a motion.
The motion can include the correction for the spelling, and they can still be approved.
Good. Let's get it right.
I move to approve the minutes from the January 31st, 2025 meeting.
Amended to correct the misspelling?
Correct.
Right.
Okay. I second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
None opposed? Motion carries. We'll move on now to old business, and that is the discussion and potential recommendations of amendments to the Village Ethics Ordinance. I think it's important to provide a little bit of background on how we got here. I was originally recruited to be on the Ethics Committee by Kathy Aducci and was told that there was a desire to have a best-in-class ethics ordinance. And I know the other commissioners that I worked with at that time were really recruited for the same reason. And we spent an enormous amount of time redrafting the ethics ordinance to make that the case. Over time, once we had a draft, it was submitted for review, and we got quite a few comments from the village attorney, from the village administrator, and it was a very complicated red line. But it included in it was the provision that cut our jurisdiction over conflicts of interest. I missed it. I didn't see that change. As a result of that, I know that when it went up to the Board of Trustees, that was not something that we had flagged as a problem that we wanted to change. I missed it. As a result, when this ethics committee or with this ethics complaint came up years later, right? Years later, I know I was surprised. I don't want to speak for anyone else. I was surprised that we did not have the jurisdiction over it. It was never my intent that we draft an ethics ordinance that actually cut the authority of the ethics commission. So that was why at the end of last meeting, we made the suggestion that we be allowed to to go back to make some comments and urge some changes to the ethics committee, most importantly, giving us back the authority that we always, at least in my mind, always intended the commission to have. So I can't tell you, I can't speak for why that edit was submitted, but it was, and it was submitted to us, and it was just an edit that was missed, at least on my part. So I took the liberty of reviewing the ethics ordinance and comparing it with the original one that we had submitted, and through some of the changes that had happened. Now, there were lots of changes that were submitted by the village that made sense. You know, these kinds of documents go through various versions. Now, as a commission, there are certain issues that we wouldn't necessarily be aware of. And so some of the language changed and we were very well aware of it, and it made great sense. So my purpose in going through the draft and redlining it today was to make sure that there was not any other changes, to make sure that we could get some agreement on a red line that we can submit to the village board to make sure that our original intent with regard to that, with this ordinance, is carried through.
Peggy, if I may,
yes.
I just want to echo, please, what you're saying. And I think just maybe, you know, thank you. And then, you know, correct the record just a little bit with regard to inclusion of conflict of interest being, at least as far as our consideration, to be our intent to be within the scope of this committee. You said, I think on a couple occasions, I missed it. I was part of that redraft and review process. So I want to say we missed it. It wasn't just you. Yeah. I missed it as well. You know, I know when we went through it, we had clearly included conflicts of interest within the scope of the committee, and it's what our intent was. As to why that change or that edit was submitted in the way it was, leading to us not recognizing that, I don't know, and I don't know that we will know, and nor do I think we should even be in the business of trying to endeavor and find out why. What I think the mm-hmm. important issue is that we bring it to where we think it should be and have it resubmitted to the board. So yeah, I was surprised to find out about it when the first complaint actually came through. It clearly was not the intent and not what I thought we would be seeing when we look back at this in that context. But I did want to just note for the record that it wasn't just you that missed it. I was part of the process and did as well.
Thank you
for your comments.
Appreciate it.
And that's all I wanted to say at the moment.
Thanks. I think what may make the most sense, I did see that you submitted a document with some red lines on the and commentary on the red line that I sent through. Is there any objection for just walking through that, or did I miss anything, or do we want to just use that as the template, or is, you know, is there any other?
So I'm fine with that. I did not have an opportunity after you sent this and after Greg sent his comments to redline my comments, but I definitely have comments and questions about how some of the proposed changes coordinate with section 123.5E, for example. So I can save those and we can go through and talk about it as we go through it.
Yeah, let's do that, because yeah. I want to make sure that we cover this is our opportunity right now. We're going to go back to the board with some suggestions for changes. And so it should be, you know, all inclusive at this point. We don't want to go back again. Let's just make some, you know, let's walk through the changes that I have, and then we can do it slowly, and to the extent that we, you know, reach a page where I don't have a note and you do, just let me know and we'll go through it in that way, as long as that works for everybody.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, great. One of the first things that I did, I noticed there is a provision in here that it doesn't matter whether a term of art within it or a definition is capitalized. But I went through and capitalized those that I saw that were in the definitions. Part of that is just legal nicety because I'm used to seeing it that way. So I made those changes. I may have missed some in terms of those defined terms, but I do think we should be consistent throughout and try and make sure that it's capitalized. All of the terms, the defined terms are capitalized. So that was one thing that I did. And I can double check it after this to make sure that the other defined terms are treated similarly. Greg, I know your line here. I was not sure about whether or not how to deal with employees. There was some back and forth when we originally did this about when employees are covered and when they are not. But your note that the village covered individuals isn't defined to include employees is, I note, and that takes care of a lot of the concerns that I have.
Could I raise a quick point on employees because it's come up?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Okay. I just want to point out that when you look at the different remedies, if an employee is covered and the Ethics Commission has the authority to deal with that employee, there are some provisions that talk about removal, for example. And one of the things that's a concern if employees are covered is to make sure that the ordinance is not giving more authority to the commission as a non-elected appointed body. Is really the authority over the employees of the village rests solely with the village board through the administration, Matt, and so forth, to deal with things like discipline and termination. So if we want employees to be covered to the greatest extent possible, we probably need to look at that carefully when you look at what can happen if there's a finding. I just wanted to make that point. If they're not covered, then the problem goes away, and that maybe there was some back and forth in 2022. I don't know. And maybe that's why there's a little bit of ambiguity. So I just wanted to make that point.
No, I think that's a good point. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I want to echo that because I think there's some, we need to make sure the procedures and processes and consequences of 123.5 align with 123.8. And right now, I'm not sure that they do. And so if we are taking in 123.5, I think the consequences of doing that have to be very carefully considered.
Can you expand on that? And what in 123.8 are you referring to?
So 123.5E gives enforcement of this section exclusively to the village board.
Correct.
And then, but so if we're taking it in, then are we cutting that subsection?
No, my understanding is that we have the ability to investigate and make recommendations, and then the recommendations are then sent to the board, and the board has the authority to act on them or not.
So then it's not clear to me how 123.5, pardon me, how 123.5 subsection E aligns with the procedures that will be undertaken by the commission. I think we see that in 123.8 section, C.
I want to make sure I'm in the right place. 123.8.
Yep.
And then where are you? 123.
Capital C.
Capital C.
Wait. I can't tell if that's a separate. It says B, the commission shall have the following powers. And then there's a C1 below that, but it's tabbed in, not like.
It's part of two, I think.
It's part of two. Well, there's a list of.
Oh, I see.
It's confusing because
there's
the
some
C
weird.
Is,
there's some
is
weird
not
formatting.
Indented correctly. Yeah, that some confused me as well. That should be a C. Should be separate. You know,
that's a capital
a,
C, like a
capital
section,
C. A,
section yep. C. Okay. So
I'm sorry. On what page are you? I'm still trying to catch up.
Bottom of 13, Peggy. The very bottom of 13.
I think my page is maybe different.
C, right? These are indented. Is there? I'm not finding a large A or a B.
Yeah, there is.
There.
B.
Oh, okay, great. Okay.
So I've got
C, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then it goes on to the end. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, mm-hmm. 10, 11.
Got it.
Outline the structure of how the commission, what the commission is supposed to do when they receive a complaint, and how that process works. And I'm not clear how that section clearly. So section 8 talks about how the commission shall issue a final recommendation to the alleged violator and to the village president or village administrator. Mm-hmm. So that's fine, but that doesn't necessarily align with 123.5e.
Which is at the bottom of page 11.
Correct.
And I understand, and I hear that concern because I didn't get it into my red lines that I sent earlier, but I noted that, and it's a little confusing because the way this reads now, it says the village board shall have the exclusive authority to enforce the ethical standards of this section, and I think it needs to be modified to enforce the recommendations of this committee, right? Because we don't have the power to enforce them legally. We're an appointed committee.
Right.
We're not an elected body. But we can make our findings, make our recommendations. But the board, as I see it, would have the exclusive authority to enforce those recommendations. And I think we need to modify the language to read that way.
Correct.
Because it would clear. Does that clarify it?
It does somewhat, but then I'm also concerned about, you know, parts where it says if the commission dismisses a complaint, you know, just as an example, does that then get approved by the board, that the board has to approve our dismissal? Because we're not really.
There are some sections in here where the commission appears to have some final decision-making power, and that's one of them.
Right.
The other is there's some references to fines that don't talk about a recommendation of a fine. They appear to say the commission has the authority to fine.
Right.
So that's an example.
Yeah.
I'm just pointing that out. So if the commission is to be a recommending body, then that probably should be cleaned up.
Agreed. I also think it's very important.
Can I comment on that last part real quick? Because as I read it, it says subject, and I'm looking at the bottom of page 17, the very end of this, it speaks to penalties. Subject to a fine, okay? Subject to discipline, subject to discharge, removal of office. But again, those are only recommendations we can make or findings we can make.
Yes.
That enforcement, I think, has to come from the village board, which is set forth in subsection E at the bottom of page 11. So I don't know that there's any confusion on that penalties issue because it says, you know, may be subject to, and that's because we can't do it.
I think that can be cleared up in the language, though.
Yeah, I was just pointing out, if you look at 7, Greg, for example, on page 16, in mm-hmm. that it's within 30 days, the hearing, blah, blah, blah. The commission shall either dismiss the complaint, and as the commissioner pointed out, It doesn't say recommend dismissal, so that appears to be a final authority. Or issue a recommendation for discipline, that says recommendation to the alleged violator, or impose, not recommend the imposition, but there it uses impose. The commission can recommend discipline or impose a fine. So those are where it appears to be saying on some things there is recommending to the board, and on other things the commission has the final decision-making power to at least dismiss a complaint. At least that's how it could be read here. Dismiss a complaint, or if it's or impose a fine that's not a recommendation but is a direct imposition. So, you know, we just want to make sure we clarify what we're doing, I guess.
Where's the language for imposed that you're talking about? Because I'm looking at enforcement E is and penalties F. Under 123.5?
Yeah, we got to find these.
It's 123.8.
Eight.
C7.
It's on page 16.
Okay.
And if you look at the Arabic numeral 7, that's a little bit past the halfway point down. It talks about within 30 days. That paragraph has the language that I was talking about.
Okay. Well, I think that's an easy cleanup. I do believe that this, that we are supposed to make determination that if we make a determination that a complaint doesn't rise to the level of, and I think it's very clear here, that we can dismiss a complaint and that we don't have to go to the board and make that recommendation. And I think that's appropriate. Does anybody disagree with that?
No.
Is there an appeal process for the person who's making the complaint?
Not as far as I know.
So if we just dismiss it, they have no way of raising that concern further. I think that there has to be a way for them to say,
but why? I mean, if you look at
might
standard,
do something wrong, right? I'm not saying any of us would, but we might be wrong and we might dismiss something that we think doesn't rise, but that shouldn't be the end of a citizen's rights to make a complaint and for that complaint to be heard and recognized.
Well, they would have the opportunity if they wanted to bring it to the board directly, if they wanted. I mean, they're supposed to be here. They could make them public. There are ways in which that could happen. But if a complaint doesn't on its face really make a claim under this ordinance, we're empowered to make that determination and to dismiss it.
So the way that would work legally. So I think it would be problematic for the complainant to re-raise it with the village board, just because remember, when someone is making, let's take, say, a conflict of interest complaint about someone, you're making a complaint about someone's conduct. You're saying they did something unethical. So once a decision is made on the same facts, it should be the end of it. It shouldn't be able to be re-raised, and it doesn't provide it here. I think what you would have, this
I'm
would
talking
be
on a practical level.
No,
right?
No, I understand, but I would just I was trying to address the concern about no legal remedy. Right, there's nowhere to go. There is a place to go because the village would have entrusted this commission with that gatekeeping power. Mm-hmm. And the way it would go, that's a final determination by a delegated authority. And there's a way to challenge that in the circuit court under the code. It would be through a petition for writ of certiorari, just like in some codes, for example, zoning boards have some final decision-making power to deny or grant variations. Those can't go to the board because they're not set up that way, but they can be challenged if the property owner feels that the rights, you know, weren't served. So there is a way. Talking about practical, is it practical that someone would go to that length?
Yeah.
But there is technically a remedy, and that's what it would be. I just wanted to point that out.
Excellent point. Thank you. Does that address your concern?
Yes.
Great. Let me go back to where we were.
And that kind of review, by the way, procedurally is just like administrative review. It's like an appeal. The village prepares a record of what the decision was, and it gets sent out. It's review on the record.
The next thing I have on my mine is it is under prohibited source. And it's section E. And it reads, and this has to do with any person or entity who is, this is sort of the prohibited source in terms of relates to is registered or required to be registered with the Illinois Secretary of State under the Illinois Lobbyist Registration Act. Then it gives the specific citation, except that an entity not otherwise a prohibited source does not become a prohibited source merely because a registered lobbyist is one of the members or serves on its board of directors. That was added in the comments. This did not come from us when we originally drafted it, and in rereading it, I'm not sure I understand it.
So I think, if I may, I think what this does is, so prohibited sources are the person that would be providing the remuneration or the gift, right?
Correct.
So this would prohibit if someone is registered or required to be registered as a lobbyist, those individuals would be a prohibited source. They couldn't give any kind of gift to anyone covered by the Gift Ban Act on the receiving end. I think what this does is to say that an entity that is not otherwise a prohibited source, meaning they don't do business with the village, they're just an entity who just happens to have on its board or part of its group some individual who is required to be registered, does not make the entity that individual, this registered lobbyist, is affiliated with or on the board of, a prohibited source. It doesn't contaminate the source and make it a prohibited source. I think that's what it says. I don't know how necessary that is, but that's how I read it.
I just don't know why we would include that exclusion. The fact that there's a registered lobbyist on a board is potentially problematical. You don't think that it's a necessary exclusion?
I don't know that it is off the top of my head. I think that's what it means. I don't know why it was added. If this is something Greg Smith added, I don't know why. I can't tell you legally. I don't think it's required. One, this is the Gift Ban Act, right? And so you just incorporate the statute as it is. So if it's in the statute, I would think you would just put it in here. So if you don't want it, what we can do is, if you don't like it in here, I can make sure it's okay, but I think you can just take it out. As long as it's in the Gift Ban Act and you're adopting it, or the village is adopting it, I think it's okay. But I'm not sure what the goal was here.
And again, just to be clear, what we're reading from is the definition of a prohibited source for the code, but prohibited sources, the issue comes up within the Gift Ban Act.
Right. Right. Yes. No, that's correct. That's
that the component. Yep.
Yes, you're correct.
I'd like to get rid of it because I think it's cleaner to just refer to, as we do, the Illinois Legislative Illinois Lobbyist Registration Act. So that just refers to it.
So what you're proposing is recommending striking what the language you have highlighted.
Correct.
I have no problem with that.
I agree.
Okay, great. Moving on. The next comment I have is on page 8. Oh, we don't have to worry about that. That's got to do with the employees. Am I miss? I'm at page 10. Is there any other anything you want to address prior to page 10? I don't want to blow through it and miss anything. We all good?
Yes.
Okay. All right. The next thing I have highlighted under 123.6, duty to report. There was an ad under the section that reads, any village covered individual or contractor with knowledge that a village covered individual or contractor has violated a requirement of this chapter, says has an obligation to report the violation to the village administrator, village board member, or member of the or to the village administrator. That is how it reads. Yeah. I have suggested that we include the village board, a village board member, or a member of the ethics commission. I think the way this reads right now is inconsistent with the later provisions that these types of complaints should be remain anonymous until they've been addressed by us. What do the other members think?
I had submitted a comment. And before I comment on that, I do think we need to clean up the language that Commissioner DeGruff talked about earlier, which is on the prior page at the bottom of page 11 in subsection E, enforcement.
Okay.
I don't know. We can go back to that. I just want to make sure.
No, let's do it.
You want to do it now? Just keep it in order, because I think that was an important piece that you raised.
I agree. Tell me what should be changed, because I'm controlling the document.
The way it reads now, it says the village board shall have the exclusive authority to enforce the ethical standards of this section and impose penalties or violations thereof. I just think we need to clarify that the village board has the exclusive authority to enforce the recommendations of the ethics commission relating to violations of this standard. That would be how I would recommend.
So we have this enforcement section in.
And maybe it's in the wrong spot.
I think, yes. So I think it belongs somewhere else, because it's not in gift ban and it's not in prohibited political activities. It pops up in ethical standards, right?
I think the reason this ended up here is because the ethical standards, which are the conflict of interest, was culled out of the jurisdiction, and that may be why.
Exactly. Okay. So I think it needs to either come out of this.
Let's see. I got it.
And then go into the process of what the Ethics Commission does and how that whole process works, which I think is user-friendly to the layperson reading this, of like, here are the steps of what happens, and they don't have to go back and forth between various sections.
Right. Maybe the enforcement right should this not, it's in the wrong place.
It's in the wrong. My recommendation, so 123.9 is the penalties provision. There's A, B, and then I think underneath that C is where we should have enforcement saying that. You know, it just seems logical. We go through the process, what we can find, we can make our recommendations. Here's the potential penalties and enforce. Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Do penalties move as well?
Penalties is the last part of this. So I think maybe there's A and B in penalties. I think what we're looking at in enforcement, the bottom of page 11 could become what it would be, a paragraph C of penalties.
I think Chair Daly's pointing out there's also a penalty section right after the enforcement in the ethical standards,
yes,
which can probably be addressed by that later piece that you're referencing.
Yeah, I see. I'm seeing. Okay.
Could both of them are kind of repetitive or conflicting with that later section.
So you want to move enforcement penalties to what provision?
123.9. And maybe the heading for that one could be changed to enforcement and penalties.
Mm-hmm.
Would that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. Okay, I've got that note.
Sorry to derail the prior conversation.
No. This is exactly what we wanted to do. Okay.
So while we're on this same page, mm-hmm. subsection D, implementation. Does that also belong under duty to report, or is that unique to ethical standards? Or is that, because I really like that language, that it is self-enforcing and we expect everybody to be on the up and up and identify if they have a conflict also, right?
Right. I think here again, probably because this was culled out, it had its own separate universe within it. So the implementation appears to be tracking the same issues in 123-6,
right.
Correct? So it might make sense to delete it or move anything relevant there to there so that it's applicable generally. And not just to the ethical standards.
Yes.
That could go up at the top as part of the original implementation or the preamble. Just throwing that out. But we can also move it to 123.9.
I think that's a really solid idea of making it part of the preamble.
I like that also. I like the language of that section. I think it holds everyone to a very high standard.
And I think it's important to say, you know, if you put it at the back end of it, it seems more of a throwaway. You know, if you have it at the very beginning, it makes it clear. Okay, I've got that note. Okay, then we go back. Anything else before we get to 123.6?
No.
No.
All right, and how do you, Greg, you had a note. We had gone to the fact that this provision says that you have to bring your complaint to the village administrator, period, and that's it. And I think that's incorrect. I mean, there's really an understanding that you can bring the complaints to the Ethics Commission directly, which is, in fact, you know, I received one of the complaints directly. Greg, you had a note. Do you want to talk to that?
Yeah, so... One, I mean, I think it should read that it should be made to the report should be made to the Ethics Commission because, candidly, and I think especially in a small town which we have, you want to come straight to the commission as opposed to being reticent of upsetting anybody. That you may have to continue, it's a small place. And I think you want to go right to the commission. I think it should read that way for those reasons. But I also think relative, then the note I had was in relation to your statement, Peggy, that it could be inconsistent with the anonymity clause.
Yes.
And I think we just want to say here, in the duty to report section, after a report is made pursuant to this section or a duty to report, the reporting individual and the nature of the report shall remain anonymous except to those required under this code to have such knowledge. Because a complaint shouldn't be, the complaint should remain anonymous until this committee reviews it and determines that it has some basis. And then we go into the formal investigation proceeding, at which time it can't remain anonymous any longer.
What if the person doesn't want to be anonymous?
The
complainant doesn't want to be anonymous.
They have the right to bring it into the public. We had that on our meeting, right? Where they stood up and read their complaints during the public section of it.
I don't know.
Are they presumptively anonymous?
I mean,
I think the
fact that somebody makes a complaint should remain, I think, anonymous until it's determined that there's substantial basis for the complaint, at which time the person that is subject to the complaint hasn't, I think, a right to defend themselves against any of those allegations. And I don't know how that can be done if it's anonymous. I think at that point it's in the open. And if you don't want to stand behind the complaint in a public setting, probably speaks to the nature of the complaint itself. You know, I just don't know how the complainant remains anonymous throughout the entirety of the process.
Is it assumed that, and I think this was already asked, that all the complaints, even if they're from an individual who isn't saying, this is an anonymous, like someone who's hidden the identity or filed something saying, I want to be anonymous. Is the procedure that they're all treated as confidential, even if the person hasn't asked that to be happening?
It should
be,
my
question. And they're saying yes.
I thought that was the intent, and until such time as we review the complaint and determine that it has some meritorious basis. And if it does, then we have to investigate it. And then at that point, it's no longer anonymous because people need to be notified and certain actions need to be taken. I mean,
correct.
Peggy, is that how you understood it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And we want people to be able to bring things up and to keep them confidential for everybody's protection. Right. I mean, if a specious complaint is received, we don't want to get into, wrecking people's reputations. And in addition, a complainant may wish to remain anonymous at the beginning of the process. So there's all kinds of reasons that these things are investigated confidentially. And then to the extent that there is a determination that some kind of recommendation should be made and that it's a valid complaint, then the process here kicks in.
That's public record.
Yes.
I think for me, I'm getting, I'm not understanding how a confidential complaint or a confidential investigation necessitates a anonymous complaint. So last time we had people come up and speak that echoed a written complaint we had that was not anonymous. So I think if we then went and did an investigation and asked for facts and data and information relating to that complaint, certainly that should be confidential, right? But
well, I think there's a little, at least with respect to one of the people that spoke here tonight, they said that they made their complaint and they wanted it to be anonymous and it was outed, right?
Which that should not happen. I agree with you.
Right.
If somebody wants their complaint to be anonymous, absolutely, we should honor that.
Right. I'm not speaking to how that happened. I don't have any knowledge.
Neither am I.
Yeah.
Well, but I also think too is,
So I've been through this a little bit more carefully, this procedural section. It looks like the way this is set up, it is the presumption that all complaints, no matter how made, are treated confidentially during the gatekeeping function, which is, I guess, similar to a search warrant, a judge finding whether there's probable cause or not, if there's some basis. So then if you go to on page 15 at the bottom, it's number 4 is there. It says, if the complaint is deemed to be supported by sufficient evidence to allege a violation within the commission's purview, and there is a determination, it says probable cause, and someone's change that to reasonable grounds to proceed, which is fine. Then the commission shall issue notice to the respondent. And someone has, is that you, Greg, maybe add, and the identified complainant. At that point,
Those green are Peggy's changes.
Okay. So that appears to be the point where essentially you're saying there's enough here to have a regular hearing about something.
I think
our gatekeeping function, we've looked at it confidentially, and there is enough here. And then at that point, Greg, to your point, you have the right to face your accuser. And so at that point, there needs to be an identity. Is that what you were thinking, Peggy?
I'm not sure these are all the changes that I made.
I have red changes and then blue, and then now I'm seeing these green. Do we know where those came from?
I don't know where those green came from.
Okay.
Let me look at the version. So I think what happens, though, Peggy, is when... Let me just look here.
Because I'm looking, I don't recall putting these edits in. I don't know where these edits came from.
Yeah, Chair Daly, I think the version that I originally sent to you had some track changes on there. Those may have been legacy from that version that I shared.
Oh, okay.
So All who right. made those, Matt? Do we know?
Because I asked for was a clean version of the enacted act. You know, the law.
Right. Understood. I, in an effort to try and share it quickly, found the latest Word document version I could find. And that's what this was.
Yeah, this green language appears to go out of its way to then once the probable cause finding is made and there's a determination you're going to have a hearing, let's call it on the merits, that it keeps referring to the identified complainant. But
these are not my edits. Yeah. And I think we have a real issue. I wanted to be making edits on the actual ordinance. And now I don't know that I did.
I just assumed you did. And that's,
so did I. That's what I asked for.
No, I completely understand the version in the packet that has the PDF of the existing code. That is also included in ordinance, the Word document for that. I didn't have time to collect that this afternoon when it was requested. So this was version I had.
I think we're going to have to. So I don't even know what version of this I've actually made edits on. Then we don't know that we've made edits on the actual ordinance, which is a problem.
We need the actual ordinance in a Word version.
Yes. Because we can't be making these kinds of edits. I think we're probably going to have to.
So
let's finish. I know I had said I had a hard stop, but I want to get through as much of this as we can. So I don't.
It looks like the green is what is in the final version.
It does.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Let's. We'll confirm all of that.
There's a way to run the comparison. You don't have to go through in depth. Yeah, so we'll configure that out.
Okay. I had another issue. Go ahead.
Where were we?
Well, we were on this idea of anonymity and whether anonymity is presumed on every filing, and you were having a discussion about the merits of that.
No, but I meant physically in the document. We were on... And within
123.6, we were on 12.
Yeah, okay. So just so we're clear and we have an understanding as we move forward with what will ultimately be changes to the correct document, do we have a consensus as a commission that the intent is for these to remain anonymous until we determine that there's sufficient evidence to support the claim? And then at that time, there has to be formal notifications and the anonymity can no longer remain. Is that our intent?
It's my intent.
That sounds fine by me.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're on the same page so that when we start to work that language.
That appears to be what it says.
Okay.
All
right. Thank you.
I'm looking at, I didn't note this in my red line, but in staring at it, we've got to figure out the change that we want to make. on this 123.6, in addition to who you have to report it to, and I think we've agreed that it should be a member of the Ethics Commission.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should also put in if any other, like if a violation is reported to the village president, the village administrator, or a member of the board, that it shall be referred to us for consideration. Because, you know, who knows? I mean, one of the folks that talked this evening said, you know, we didn't even know there was an ethics commission. So we don't want to make it difficult for people to report a violation. We want to make it easy. We just want to make sure that it lands with us, right?
I agree.
That makes perfect sense.
Okay, so I'll add that language.
Okay, and then, you know, a member of the Ethics Commission, should it really be to the chair of the Ethics Commission and just identified that way so that the chair receives complaints?
Sure, it's fine.
But if we were to receive a complaint, we should have an obligation to then pass it on to.
Of course,
right.
I completely agree. I think it should say, to Peggy's point, if any person other than if any person associated with the village other than the chair of the Ethics Commission were to receive a complaint under this ordinance, they shall promptly forward it to the chair of the Ethics.
Agreed.
Okay, so any other person associated with the village sees. Wait. So I think it reads better. I mean, I got concerned with this, but in no case shall the time period for a report be longer than 72 hours. That's basically saying if I think that there's a violation, then I have like 72 hours to report it. And I don't think that was ever our intent.
I think that just comes from a duty to report, not a...
Mm-hmm.
So. Obviously, yes. Anybody who wants to make a complaint can do it whenever they want. But okay. If you're a village covered individual as defined and you observe another village covered individual violate the code, you have 72 hours to report it. You can't just sit on it and hope it cures itself. You know, it's akin to the obligation attorneys have to report other attorneys that commit a violation,
right? Because then you could always say, oh, I was just about to report it.
Exactly.
It's like 5 days later, and
I think that's why that part was written that way.
Yeah, I think we can clarify it.
So maybe, well, because we're kind of talking about two things right now, there's duty to report in this section, I think should stay where it's at, but we may want to add to the end, very end of this document, after what is going to be 123.9 enforcement and penalties, 123.10 issuance, or I don't know what we'd say, just basically essentially making the complaint, where we would descriptively tell residents how they make the complaint. If any person feels a violation of this ordinance has occurred, a complaint for such can or should be made as follows, or should be directed to the chair of the Ethics Commission. And we provide, I don't know if it's an email address or something's. There's got to be a mechanism for them to get it to the chair of the Ethics Commission. And I think we have to include that as a section. So we're kind of talking about two things here.
I agree. That should be.
I think that's a great idea.
Very well spelled out.
Yep. Okay. Moving on. Anything else?
Can I, before we move on, I think that section making the complaint should also address some of the concerns we heard tonight about the need for confidentiality, to give assurances of confidentiality, how you can make an anonymous complaint, that there will be no retaliation for making such a complaint.
Well, the filing of the complaint is sort of dealt with in the 123.8. When it gets into B, the following powers and duties, the commission is authorized to act upon the receipt of a written complaint alleging a violation. Upon receipt of the complaint, these things could be added there.
I think the problem with that is it's buried in the text. So I think that can stay the way it is, because that speaks to, okay, upon receipt of a complaint, we get to do ABC. But, you know, I think in all fairness, there should be a specific point where it's like, you know, residents of River Forest, this is how you make the complaint. Not just that you can, this is how you do it.
I think that's a good idea. And if it's a little redundant, we just need to make sure that it's consistent. The language is the same.
Agreed.
Okay. Anything else before I move past page 12? Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. Greg, you've got a note here.
Yeah, this is like the heart of the
it is. This is why we're here.
Yeah, exactly. And I instead of sections and identifying portions, I think we should just say, so section B, the commission shall have the following powers and duties. Number one should read to receive, comma, consider, comma, investigate, comma, and make recommendations to the village board regarding complaints of alleged violations of this ordinance. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, give it to me again.
So the way I would suggest it read is, number one should read to receive, comma, consider, comma, investigate.
Hold on, slow down.
Sorry.
To receive, consider, investigate, yep.
And make recommendations to the village board for enforcement.
That's good.
Of complaints of alleged violations of this ordinance. So it's this ordinance. It's the whole thing, not any one portion of it or specified portions.
Can I make one suggestion?
Please.
For this ordinance, because ordinance is so generic, what about saying this chapter 23?
Yeah, chapter 23 of the village code.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Even better.
Okay.
Does this have a name? Because what if things change?
This chapter?
Okay. This chapter? Okay.
It's called ethics.
So we want to just say in violations of this chapter?
Yes.
Okay.
Or, yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, that's tight. That works.
Again, I'd probably like to see it in writing and see if it.
Oh, I think we're going to have one more meeting where we.
I agree.
We re-edit, we get a red line, we distribute it in advance, and then we'll vote on it to make the recommendation of that version, because I think we've got to double check this against the actual ordinance, and there's a couple of larger edits to that back end that we're going to need to make. All right, anything on page 13?
Do we need subsection 6?
No.
Hold on a second.
So it's a limit. It's
page 13.
Limitation.
My pages are stuck together.
6 there.
Anytime it says
it's
matters within the commission's purview, that was language added by outside counsel, and it was all limiting what we could do, and much of it,
I agree. We don't
make sense. Okay, I'm losing it. Okay, anything on page 14? I've got a note on 2B. Copy of the complaint shall be provided to the village attorney, village administrator, village president, and village board of trustees immediately upon its receipt by the commission. The village administrator shall assign village staff to support the commission in the discharge of its duties under this section. My note is, isn't this a conflict? Doesn't this contradict the provision allowing for anonymity? Shouldn't we be able to investigate this first if perchance a person is on the board that is the subject of the complaint? Greg, you want to talk about your note?
Yeah. So, and I had further edit since then. So the way it reads now, shall be given to the various individuals immediately upon its receipt. I think it should be modified to say given to those individuals upon determination of a reason, upon the committee determining that there's a reasonable basis for the complaint. And I don't think we need to run it up the chain if we don't have a complaint that's without any reasonable foundation, I guess. And the second part that I would add to this, and I think we need to be specific and say this, is that a copy of the complaint shall not be provided to any person who is the subject of the complaint unless and until the Ethics Commission shall determine that the complaint passes initial review pursuant to section 123.8(c)(2)(d). I think I have that cited correct. If a village trustee is the subject of the complaint, they shouldn't be getting a copy of the complaint until we've had an initial review, because there's fear of retribution by the person potentially making the
complaint. Totally.
And it violates, as you note, the anonymity of it.
So
I think though you need to have some involvement. I think so, because you can't make that initial determination except in a meeting. And to have a meeting, you're going to need staff to set up that meeting. So I think what you can do is to say something like a copy of the complaint shall be provided to those individuals that within the village administration, and we can mess with the language, but the idea is that are reasonably necessary in order to process the complaint. We could spell it out. I think it should be the village administrator, the village attorney, and then say unless those individuals are the subject.
Okay. I think that makes a lot of sense.
You need help to get you together because you can't meet secretly. That's the problem.
That's a great point. And I think what we would do then is state specifically that any person to whom the complaint is provided prior to that initial determination review is bound by the anonymity provisions. So, for example, if we send it to you, Matt, the code states you're bound
by
the anonymity provision. Does that make sense?
I agree with that. I just wrote that down. Persons involved are subject to the confidentiality provisions of this ordinance, right?
One question I have in terms of preparing for that initial review on the agenda, we can keep it as simple as initial review of complaint. We don't need to provide any additional information for Open Meetings Act or anything else. Okay.
Correct.
I just wanted to make sure that
agenda probably using language in the code that relates to this initial review, and then there would be no further information. Right.
When I was on the Cook County Ethics Board, the way they would put it is they would assign a number to a complaint, and they would just say, complaint number one, complaint number two, and they were just, and that was what was on the agenda.
Okay.
And then you'd come back out, and to the extent that there was, you could say, complaint number one has been dismissed, complaint number two, blah, blah, blah. So you are addressing it, and it's clear that there's work being done on a complaint, but you don't have to give any other detail.
Right.
Okay, so I've got notes, hanging notes on that one. Anything else on page 14 that we should be addressing? Okay.
Not for me.
15, most of these are edits from, they're not my edits. So these, according to what you were saying, then these should add, these edits should actually be the language.
Right. They're in the final because they're what went to the village final. Board for the final approvals.
Okay, great. And then I had a note just in looking at on 15, number 3, in the bottom half, to change 15 to 30. Because it's just the amount of time the commission's ruling on evidentiary sufficiency of a complaint, and if necessary, whether there are reasonable grounds to proceed within 30 business days after receiving a complaint. And that wouldn't even need to be business days. I just had in my mind days. It just seems like 15 days sometimes when you're dealing with holidays and volunteers and all the rest of it seems a little tight to me. But
I agree.
Okay. Do we want to keep it 30 days or 30 business days?
30 days is fine. 30 business days.
I agree.
30 days. Okay. And that may be the last note I had. No, here's one.
I have a note before that, though, on page 16, paragraph 7.
Okay.
It's a little confusing. This is where we started this whole conversation tonight talking about, you know, the authority for final determination, impose a fine, recommend discipline. And it was unclear here. And I think we just want to say where it says or be within the kind of the middle of paragraph 7 or mm-hmm. be issue a recommendation. I think we can say issue a recommendation for discipline, comma, a fine, comma, or both to the alleged violator and to the village administrator.
So got it.
You know, it was separated out there and it became unclear.
Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that. Anything else on 16?
So, can I ask a question?
Oh, of course.
So if, for example, our recommendation isn't discipline or a fine, maybe it is, for example, we think something should be looked at again. Like, let's assume there's a conflict of interest in a board, and we were hypothetically to agree there was a conflict of interest. What do we do in that case?
We can change this to issue a recommendation, including but not limited to.
Yes, that would be good. And then that could even be you could even recommend training, for example, in yes. a certain cases. So that you
yeah, like to, including but not limited to. Yeah, that makes yeah. sense.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's a great point. Anything else on 16?
You had a note at the bottom there.
Is this even possible, that one?
Yeah, I'm not sure what you meant.
This has got to do with the 7 days. It's under 9. It says, if a complaint is filed during the 60 days preceding the date of any election on which the respondent is a candidate, the commission shall render its decision within 7 days after the complaint is filed and during the 7 days preceding the election. The commission shall render such decision before the date of that election. It does say if possible, but it's basically saying we have to immediately make a decision, period, and make it public.
I understand the reasoning for right. doing that, right?
It's if not it's buried.
Somebody who's running, it, this mm-hmm. is if the respondent is a candidate. And so the public deserves our speedy action in that kind of a situation so that.
What about something less specific? The commission shall render its decision prior to the date of the election, if possible.
I like that because honestly, I agree. If this comes up during an election, it could be dirty pool. It's unfair. It's just, assuming that it's not anonymous, right? That it's not confidential. One presumes here that you're doing this because it's public, right? That's why we have to move that quickly on it. Maybe it doesn't matter either way.
Although this is saying if a complaint is filed during the 60 days, so 60 days before any election, it could be filed like 3 days before the election.
So yes. I think we should say that if a complaint is filed during the 60 days preceding the date of any election, the commission shall meet at its earliest opportunity with the intent of resolving the complaint prior to the election. I mean,
to the extent possible.
So meeting as soon as possible with the intent of resolving it. Because you can have that intent and it may not be physically possible to do it.
And this kind of language would be viewed by the courts as directory anyway, not mandatory. In other words, it's a goal for yourself. So
the 7 days isn't, right? So better for us.
The 7 does seem a little absurd.
I just don't know theoretically if, you know.
Yeah.
I'm on a plane to such and such location. Right. I mean,
I think it would be better to keep it more general, but to say that it's our goal to get these out prior to an election if they come in within 60 days. So the public has the information.
So
it's warranted or not.
So the commission shall meet at the earliest date possible with the intent to render its decision prior to the election. If possible, right? Anything else in there?
Yeah, and I think if possible is redundant because it speaks to our intent. And you know, we could have the intent but not be able to. You know, I think that implies possibility, but I don't.
So delete all of it prior to the election?
Yeah, I just think with the intent of resolve, I mean, that's the stated intent.
I agree.
And if we're within an unusual time constraint that's not possible for some reason, it's not. That's why I think saying if possible is just redundant. It's implied in that.
Okay, good. Yeah, this something like a 7-day trigger you can trip that, miss that, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, problematical despite everybody's best efforts.
We can't even have a quorum within 7 days.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's what it took to schedule this meeting. So,
right.
You know,
yeah, 2 days notice too, right?
Yeah. Okay, good. Anything else on page 17?
Only that just, you know, we're going to call that enforcement and penalties, add C and D, which was from prior pages, and then have a 2310 section issue, you know.
Complaint processes,
yep.
Okay, so there you go. Add two provisions from earlier.
Paragraph saying, and it doesn't have to be unduly long. It should really just be one paragraph how a complaint is made and to whom.
And it could commit the village to have that available on the website, publicly, easily accessible, something like that too.
Simple.
That form or contact information, whatever we think.
I mean, there could be.
That's a great idea. It should be simple. You should be able to go up onto the website and say ethics complaint in the search bar and have the first thing is how to make it. So, okay, good. Anything else? By the way, thank you, everybody. I think we've really accomplished quite a lot. And I you know, hopefully my intent is I will make these edits and send them along, and then we can schedule another meeting at which point. And I'm going to try and get these done tomorrow so people have time to look at it. And then hopefully at the next meeting, we can make our decision, make our vote in terms of the recommendations to the board.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for your keeping track of it all.
Oh, yeah, happy to
drafting.
Do so.
Echo that. Thank you.
Okay, so let's click save so that I indeed... did keep track of it all. Let's go back to the agenda then. Where are we? Got to pull that up. Board packet. Okay, old business. Any new business?
None.
Okay. None for me.
Any other business?
None.
Okay.
None.
All right. We need a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries. We are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Being adjourned at 7:25.